today on Off Mic, it's not the London Bridge, but a bridge nonetheless. There's growing concern about the demolition of a pedestrian bridge in East Chicago. School children often use it to cross a busy roadway. But coming next week, it's being demolished and right now not being replaced. We'll get the latest. We go back into the Off Mic vault for some past conversations on media literacy. And did you see that play by the Cubs Javi Baez made yesterday? We'll talk about it. All this on Off Mic. Welcome to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. In East Chicago, there's a pedestrian overpass bridge that crosses over Columbus Drive. It's been there for years. I actually used to cross over it when I was a kid growing up in East Chicago. Beginning next month, there are plans to demolish the structure because it's no longer safe. But there are concerns that the Indiana Department of Transportation will not be replacing the pedestrian bridge or overpass. That's causing much concern because so many kids use that overpass to cross over Columbus Drive to get to the Sunnyside neighborhood of East Chicago. Washington Elementary School is just down the block. Joining us to talk about this issue is Stacy Winfield. Stacy, welcome to Off Mic.
Thank you for inviting me to your show.
No problem. Stacy, before we get into the issue, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you get involved with this?
Well, actually, Mike, I am a East Chicago resident for 57 years. Actually, grew up on Guthrie, but then moved to Sunnyside area. Being in Sunnyside, knew basically it's a small community where everyone knows everyone. Everyone knows everyone's children. And where I came across it, I was one of the first elected school board members that was elected to East Chicago. And came across me when I was on there, maybe my second or third year, that there was conversation about demolishing the viaduct. One thing about me, I used to work in School City and for 13 years, so I always had a concern for the children because I was once their age. So when it came across me, I was kind of upset because before the viaduct, there was a tunnel in the 70s. I was one of those students that used to walk under that tunnel. So there was always a pathway to get across Columbus Drive, which you know is a very busy intersection. So when I heard that, I contacted NDOT myself, and I spoke with a young man. I kept on trying to get in touch with someone, spoke with a young man and told him that I was against that demolition of that viaduct. What can we do to save the viaduct, the cross path for the children of East Chicago? I brought it back to the school board members and the superintendent at that time, and we spoke about how can we save it. Well, at that time, NDOT told me that they would actually, there were some repairs. The bridge was old, and there need to be repairs done. At that time, I asked that you please not, it might have been around April, we asked that they would not do anything, any repairs until, if possible, until school was out in June, which they agreed, and they did wait till June, but they boarded the viaduct up. At that time, they boarded it up until October, and that's when the crossing guards came in action, crossing the children across Columbus Drive because of the board up and the damage that they said at that time that was there. In the meantime, I'm thinking that repairs have been made, so we're good. Then all of a sudden, so many years later, I'm hearing here that once again, demolition is in action. I received a call. I received a call maybe a week before they had the first meeting.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. According to the Indiana Department of Transportation, work is set to begin on the overpass. It's at technically it's the intersection of US 12 and Alder Street in East Chicago, beginning on Tuesday, which is June 1st, to demolish the pedestrian bridge overpass. So in addition to that, they say traffic is going to be reduced to one lane in each direction through this intersection, and Alder Street will be closed to the north and south of the intersection. The detour for Alder Street will follow Main Street to the north of George Circle to the south, And I'm looking at this map, and if if people can just bear with me. So I guess you go down Alder Street, and then they're going to come all the way around where Franklin School is at. It looks like a mess. And not only that, that's a heavily traveled road on Columbus Drive. So you're going to have all that traffic, possible trucks. So I understand they got to do work, but it does seem like, wow, that's really going to be just with that alone. And it's the work is going to go through July. So it's not going to cross into the school time. But then there's not going to be an overpass when kids have to go and be going back to school. So have you any information as to why they're not going to rebuild this pedestrian overpass?
Well, my understanding through them is that NDOT does not build bridges, VIDOC. That's something they do not. And the VIDOC was not built through NDOT. They really did not know who built it, whether they called another name. I really don't want to call the name, but there was another company they said that may have done it. But because they did not build it, and that's not what they do. They do not just build.
They don't build them, but they knock them down.
Yes, they do demolish them. I did go around and take pictures of the viaduct myself and where it's fenced off and everything. So there is a lot of damage to the viaduct, but my concern has always been the children. What about the children? What about our children of East Chicago? We were once them. And there's a singer, Yolanda Adams, that says that we were once them. You know, we went through what they're going through. A lot of people say, well, you know, I don't see that many children walking over the viaduct. If five children walk across that viaduct, it saves five children's lives. So what they said, they had been meeting with the city for 5 years concerning this issue. Me, as the precinct committee person that's been here over 16 years as that committee person, the only time I've heard of it is when it came in front of the school board. Anything else after that, 5 years ago, I have not heard anything concerning it. My concern is the Sunnyside community. We are right there at BMO Harris Bank, that our community exists there. Columbus Drive, there's a street, Butternut, to where that one lane is going to detour people into Sunnyside. Do the residents know? No, they do not. Is it a concern? Yes, it is, because we have children that actually play out in our neighborhoods every day and on that street. So it's going to be, yes, it's going to be a big mess. They, like I said, they were having conversations with the city and the city officials trying to see what would happen. Can I speak on behalf of the city? No, I cannot. Was it presented to this council that's in right now? No, it has not been presented to us. So I can't speak on behalf of the city. I cannot speak on behalf of the council. I speak on behalf of myself because I once went through this with them, and I'm concerned. And we have a page on Facebook that I let the residents know what is going on, and I continue to do that. But what can we do? We need help. State Representative Earl Harris was there, and that's what he's seeking. He said, what can we do to get help? As far as we were concerned, he told us that their budget year is actually, they did their two-year budget year. So now how can they help rebuild that bridge if they can, if their budget is already put in for the next 2 years? So when people ask me, so what do you think? I said, do I have faith in another bridge going up? Honestly, no, I do not. Do I want to see another bridge go up? Yes, and I pray every day that we do get something. I hope that whoever is going to come together, because I can't give you a definite answer who's going to be a part of putting this viaduct up or this walkway up for our children, but I just pray that it actually happens.
Have you heard anything from your elected officials, either city council members or the mayor or other state representatives?
Well, I am on the city council. I'm the 4th district councilwoman. I have spoken to my constituents. They are concerned. All 9 of the constituents are concerned. Like I said, State Representative Earl Harris, he's there with us and he's in support. Senator Lonnie Randolph has been him and Representative Harris have been in conversation with this to see how we can come together. Will we come together for the sake of our children? Right now, this is very important because just as much as the VIDOC will be demolished, there's going to be detours once school, and it's not only just when the children are going to school. You have the main library is right there. We have children that go to the library. The library is a safe haven for East Chicago where you have parents that work and their children go to the library for the summer programs. So my concern is these children are going to have to cross Columbus Drive alone without no crossing guards because now it's summer. You know, you could say they're there from 8 to 12, but who's going to be there the other part of the day? What about Saturday and Sundays? Now you have young children that are out. They just go out, and they're walking across the street to go to the track, to the library, to visit family and friends. I'm just so afraid. And they're going to have fencing for the children when they get ready to cross Columbus Drive. But like we said, it's a one lane, and we have semis that zoom through Columbus Drive, US 12, every day. Who's going to control that? Yeah. They're going to change the timing on the stop on the lights. They said they would make a delay for the lights. But will that still save our children?
Right.
Who will be there to assist those children, not only 5 days a week, I'm talking about 7 days, Sunday through Sunday. Who's going to be there to help our children get across Columbus Drive?
And I know a lot of children do use that with their bikes. They like going up there with their bikes. It's right by the library. It's right by the police station. I don't know. It just seems like a situation that could turn bad pretty quick. And you're right. It's not just a school hour issue. It's, you know, during the summer, kids are crossing there all the time. You're not going to have a crossing guard there 24/7 unless to make it easier, maybe they build a roundabout there. I'm not sure if that would assist kids. Maybe make cars have to actually slow down a little bit more, but that takes years into the planning. And, you know, before we got on this conversation and were, you know, deciding whether to do an interview or not, you were telling me, though, but you came across information that there actually used to be an underpass on that street. Yeah. And that's before my time. Do you remember it? Do you remember that?
I used to walk under the tunnel back in the 70s. It was Franklin Elementary at that time.
That's right.
And we had to, and that was our safe way of crossing Columbus Drive. Trying to go across, we were afraid at that time. The principals had it terror into us. If we catch you crossing Columbus Drive, you're suspended. And the tunnel used to be dark. Creepy, and they had lights along the wall. So it was always dark when we went through there, but they had lights on, you know, and they had that. It wasn't the best smelling tunnel, but it was still a safe haven for us to cross Columbus Drive because back then in those days when Emmons still owned Advanced Credit Union, it was very busy like it is now, but our parents were strong and they stood and they made sure that there was a way for the children to cross Columbus Drive. So that's why I stand on my grandmother's shoulders, and because she was one that also fought, and to make sure that our children are safe going across. There was someone on social media that actually put a picture of the tunnel. And when I seen that, I was so excited because I had to tell my children, this is where I used to walk. I walked underground to get across to the library. The library was always there. So this is how we crossed Columbus Drive.
Right, right. Well, you know, hopefully you never know who's listening to this radio program. Maybe there's like engineers around Northwest Indiana, somebody who can assist. If there are people wanting to get more information, where can they find it from you?
Well, they could contact me at 219-397-3734. I have a 4th District social media page for the residents that live in this area that also lives across the Columbus Drive and Prairie Park, which will be gravely affected also. So under Stacy Winfield on Facebook, You can also go under East Chicago 4th District Community and message me, and I'll return your hit you back. You could call me via Facebook, and we could talk. I hope there's someone out there, different industries, that would say, hey, I will submit and I will help. If the city is going to rebuild, then we could collaborate for the safety of our children of East Chicago.
Well, Stacy Winfield is a concerned resident of East Chicago, also sits on the East Chicago City Council. We're talking about the demolition coming up of this pedestrian overpass over Columbus Drive and what's going to be done about it and what's going to replace it. So, Stacy, thank you so much for letting us know and joining us today on Off Mic.
Thank you so much, Mike, and have a good evening.
Well, welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. Well, have you gone there yet? Have you visited yet? You know, the new Hard Rock Casino of Northern Indiana in Gary, right off of Burr in 8094. It's glitzy, has a lot of pizzazz. It's pretty exciting. Well, if you haven't yet and you're still trying to find out more about this casino, well, rest assured, I have the piece for you. A couple of weeks ago, it opened to much fanfare. I'm going to bring you our entire report right now.
Oh, I feel it. 100,000 square feet of entertainment and excitement, 1,600 slot machines, 80 tables, over 2,100 gaming positions, and not just that, a 2,000 seat Hard Rock Live performance venue. Now, we're going to have the iconic smashing of our guitars right up here, and that's going to signify the opening of this amazing Hard Rock right here in Northern Indiana, Chicagoland. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do a countdown. When I go from one, I'm going to say smash. When I say smash, you're going to smash those guitars. Are you guys ready? Crowd, are you ready to help me count down? Here we go. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, smash! Ladies and gentlemen, make some noise!
I first had a chance to speak to Gary, Indiana Mayor Jerome Prince.
Well, there's a lot to say. I mean, clearly, I'm excited, and as demonstrated by here, there's just electric excitement, not only in the city of Gary, but across the region, the state. And, man, I'd go as far as to say I guarantee you that people across the world are recognizing and certainly acknowledging and are just as excited about today.
You know, I did a story earlier, and I asked the people this, but I'll ask you this. What makes you feel this is going to be just part and parcel different than your experience with the two gambling boats?
Yeah, I've heard you ask that question before, and I think it's an appropriate question considering that we've had casinos for 20 years now. I think what makes this different is the brand, right? And without question, the location. And the fact that a company who has the reputation and the stature of a Hard Rock and the brand, right, has taken a what some would consider to be a chance, a gamble, no pun intended, on the city of Gary makes people take a second look. And I think that within itself is going to be the catalyst to future investment.
Up next, Gary City Council Member Ron Brewer.
How do you feel about this day?
Well, I think today is a very great day for the city of Gary. This is something that, as it was stated earlier, that Senator Erlene Rogers has been pushing for land base before we got the riverboat. She was pushing for land base. And to see us get to this moment from just a couple of years ago that myself, Senator Melton, Senator Rogers, and former mayor Karen Freeman Wilson, she took a lot of hard questions from her getting up, getting in the vehicle 3 o'clock in the morning to make sure she was there for 7:30 or 8 o'clock hearings and things of that nature there, coming back still trying to run this city here. She did a lot of heavy lifting and she should be recognized.
Also getting a chance to speak were Marlon and Tito Jackson of Gary's most famous family, the Jackson Five. Marlon speaks first.
I tell you guys what, It feels so great to be back home again and just feel the support of the people around Gary, Indiana, the camaraderie, and to thank the Hot Rock Hotel for being the first to take a step and see Gary's vision and want to be a part of it. Hiring jobs, this created so many jobs, which will affect Gary, as they all say. So Gary, a diamond in the rough. You're getting ready to get polished, baby.
I'd like to say thank you to all involved in the project of the Hard Rock. I'm proud of my city, Gary, Indiana. Like, we've recorded songs that mention the school and the street, songs like 2300 Jackson Street, or Going Back to Indiana, just to show how proud we are of this city of Gary, Indiana.
Marlon and Tito weren't the only famous Gary natives to speak. I had a chance to speak to a teenage favorite singer of mine, the one and only Denise Williams. I interviewed Denise Williams inside the High Rollers Lounge inside the glitzy and flashy new Hard Rock Casino.
How do you feel today?
I feel great. I mean, this is a great, great day to be here and a great occasion. So, yeah, I'm charged. I'm charged up.
And you're originally from Gary, right?
I was born and raised here. I went to school here, graduated from Tolleson High School, went to Purdue University. So I'm native Gary, Indiana.
How far from this location did you grow up?
I think probably my home is probably about 10 minutes from here. I grew up in an area called Tarrytown.
Okay.
And so it's not too far from here at all. Yeah.
And did you ever think something, I mean, obviously Gary has had casino gaming now for 25 years, but this seems like on another scale.
This is another scale. I mean, when I walked in, it's breathtaking to see what they've done here. And even as you drive up and you see the facility, I said, oh my God, it has just been so incredible to see what's happening here in my hometown. And for so many years, I've prayed for this. You know, there's got to be something that'll come in and take the city up, because when I grew up in Gary, Indiana, it was wonderful. I had a wonderful childhood, wonderful teenage years here. So to see this happening now, oh, it's not the tears of sadness that I've had on a couple occasions. I came here, I saw it, and there are tears of joy.
How did you feel those first few years hearing your hits on the radio?
I couldn't believe it. The very first time I heard my first single, Free, on the radio, I was driving. And down the freeway, I had to pull over to the side. I was crying so hard that I had to pull over because, you know, I never ever saw myself in the entertainment business. I wanted to be a nurse. My mom was a nurse's aide. I was the first black candy striper at a hospital, osteopathic hospital in Chicago where my mom worked. And so I never saw myself in entertainment. And it's been extraordinary. All the people that I've met, singing with Johnny Mathis.
One of my favorite songs.
Oh, I told John when we finally got in the studio, I said, I've been singing along with you since I was 12 years old, so I'm ready. I said, when you did Merv Griffin or the Dinosaur Show or Johnny Carson, I said, I sang with you, so let's go. And we had tremendous success. So it's just been wonderful.
And I tell you what, I'm so glad I got to meet you at this age, because I'm not sure if 15-year-old Michael Puente could have handled it.
Well, it is so good, and I wish you continued success in your career, and, you know, that is fun, because we work very hard at what we do, but we also want to enjoy it and have fun, and I'm still having fun.
When you walk through the casino, you see memorabilia of dozens of entertainers, from the Jacksons to Prince to Katy Perry, Billie Eilish, Aretha Franklin, Eddie Van Halen, Beyonce, just so many. And the person who puts that together is a man named Giovanni
Talaferro.
And Giovanni, so you're the person here that comes up with a lot of the memorabilia inside the actual casino.
That's correct. I am the director of memorabilia design, and it's my role to oversee the design and installation of all of our artifacts around the world.
Where do you come up with first of all, what do you know, what you're going to display, and how do you come up with it?
Through a lot of research. We want to research every market that we're entering and to make certain that we are providing a story that's relevant to that local market. Who are artists that are from that space? Who are artists that have some sort of historical importance to that space? Who has performed there? You know, things of that nature.
What are some of the unique items we will see here at this Hard Rock Casino in Northern Indiana?
You're going to see a very impressive and vast variants of types of items. You're going to see items representing the Jackson family, like Joseph's 1961 guitar that started everything. We also have Michael's polo shirt from when he was 7 years old that was hand-stitched by Catherine Jackson, you know, from the very first group photo, you know, before the talent show at Roosevelt High School. You're going to see items from other Gary locals, such as Denise Williams from Let's Hear It for the Boy music video, a dress that she wore. Crystal Taliaferro, you know, legendary side woman with Mellencamp, Billy Joel, Kim Mazzell, First Lady of House Music, the Kinsey Report. And, you know, so Gary is very well represented, as well as Chicagoland. You know, we got a lot of artists from Chicago, from Fall Out Boy, OK Go, Cheap Trick, you know, REO Speedwagon, and many others. And then also a vast grouping of artists from heritage all the way to contemporary. A lot of first-time artists will be displayed here. For example, Billie Eilish. She's never been represented on Hard Rock property before. This will be the first place
here?
That, yeah, here.
Gary?
And Gary.
Billie Eilish.
Billie Eilish. We have her red coat. And an interesting interconnection there is that she covered Bad by Michael Jackson. So, you know, we tried to figure out how can we relate one to another, kind of like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon game, right? Post Malone, we have an artifact of his here, Tupac Shakur from the Gridlock film. You know, we have, you know, Sheryl Crow, Diana Ross, Stevie Wonder, Billy Joel, Kenny Aronoff, John Mellencamp, Axl Rose, a large dedication to Indiana in general. So, you know, it's going to be an extremely impressive collection. No matter where we go around the world, again, we look for world music. BTS is one artist that, you know, we're looking to get things from and, you know, for display in the future, especially the whole K-pop scene and K-pop, J-pop, and all the varieties, you know, because we have markets in Japan, we have markets in Korea, we have markets all around the world, and BTS right now, I mean, they're one of the biggest things out there.
We've heard of Hard Rock before. Hard Rock has a large following. This place just seems amazing.
Thank you.
Has it turned out even better than what you even anticipated?
I think the answer to that is yes, but with a little asterisk there. We have high expectations. High expectations about our quality. We know what we're doing. You know, we only do 5-star quality finishes, interiors. We dedicate every Hard Rock Casino or branded entity to be a top-notch entertainment destination. So the live music venue where we're able to have live concerts again, you know, that's going to have 2,000 plus seating capacity, you know, flex space where we can do sporting events, you know, so it's going to be a space that everyone will be able to come in, enjoy, have a great time, eat some amazing food and leave happy.
Well, Giovanni, thank you so much and good luck with everything.
My pleasure.
I also got a chance to sit down and talk a little with the man who heads this new casino for Hard Rock, Matt Shuford.
So today's day one, well, for us anyway, but for you, this has been a long time in the planning. How are you feeling about this grand opening?
I couldn't be more excited. Things are going so well. We are so happy with not only the product, we're happy, so excited for our team who's done just an amazing amount of work to get us where we're here today. They're excited, we're excited. We had a private VIP event last night, and overwhelmingly, the feedback was extremely positive, but feeling really good and very excited to get the doors open.
Again, I think I asked you this before. How do you see Hard Rock Casino Northern Indiana being different than what else already out there, and even what's already out there in the Chicagoland area?
So first and foremost, the first only true land-based casino product in the Chicagoland market. You look at the finishes and the amount of quality and workmanship that has been put into the property. Arguably, there's nothing in this market that can match that. But you know, one of the things I think when you think of the Hard Rock brand, it just represents so many things. But it represents, you know, quality fun, music, memorabilia, people just having a great time. And it's really important to me and my team that we build that, you know, we back that up from a guest service perspective. So we're going to distinguish ourselves from a service side of things. And when people come here, they're going to, you know, when they make their next choice to go visit a casino or go visit a great restaurant, we want to be that choice.
And in terms of what people can, you know, casino goers, what can they find here? What are some of the amenities that you think is going to draw people in?
Well, of our close to 1,600 slots, about 1,300 of them are brand new. They're new, best in market, the newest product available. We have 80 table games in different great locations around the property. We've got some great restaurants and other things on the non-gaming side as well. The Hard Rock brand started nearly 50 years ago with the Hard Rock Cafe, and that's kind of the center of our facility, kind of the showpiece with that Hard Rock Center bar being surrounded by the Hard Rock Cafe. And then, from an entertainment perspective, we have three stages. Two of them are in, one's in the Hard Rock Cafe, one's in one of our lounges. But when the time is right from a pandemic perspective to do indoor large-scale entertainment, we have Hard Rock Live, which will seat close to 1,900 people, and we're very excited to get entertainment of a larger and more popular scale in there when the time is right from a safe and safety perspective.
And speaking of the pandemic, do you feel in any way that the pandemic will hamper, alter attendance or your success here, at least in the early run?
I think things are opening up across the country, and a lot of folks have been inside for a long time or been staying at home for a long time and haven't been able to get out, and we're starting to definitely see that individuals are coming out and they want to have fun. And for a lot of adults, casino gaming is their form of entertainment. I think we're opening at least at the right time from a pandemic perspective, as we all hope we're getting to near the end of this. We still operate under a number of restrictions as we look to ensure that our guests and our team members are safe first and foremost as they come and enjoy our amenities. So ideally, we'd love to have every slot machine in service, but as of right now, we're going to have every other. And we're only going to have a portion of our table game spots available, separated by plexiglass. We want our team members, we want our guests to be safe. And there will come the day where we will operate again as a full-fledged casino, every machine open, every table game spot open. But until that time, we feel very comfortable with the model that we have built and putting safety of our guests and team members first and foremost.
Matt, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. All right. Have a great day. Appreciate you being here.
All right.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that little tour of the new Hard Rock Casino in Gary, Indiana. And we'll be back with more Off Mic. Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. Well, it's been a couple of weeks since we had a chance to check in with WBEZ sports contributor Cheryl Ray Stout. Hey, Cheryl, how are you?
I'm good, Michael. How about you?
Fantastic, fantastic. We thought we'd get a little bit of an update on things. Now, the big news that has come out, it was kind of game-related, this incredible play that everyone's talking about with Javi Baez, where let's take a listen, a little bit clip of what happened.
Baez hits it on the ground to third, Gonzalez.
This is so good.
My goodness. Wow, you got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me.
They stole a run. You have got to be kidding me. Javi Baez.
Keep going. Go. Go. Think you're invisible.
El Mago indeed.
That is unbelievable.
Basically what happened, playing against the Pittsburgh Pirates yesterday, Javi hit a ball, and it was, I think, third or shortstop, and it went to the first baseman, and the first baseman wasn't on the bag, started racing towards Javi back to home plate, and it was nifty base running, but it really all fell apart because of the first baseman. What did you think about that play?
Well, it was clever on Javi's part to do what he did, but you are right. The first baseman, Will Craig, who was their third string first baseman. This is a guy in college. He was a reliever and he was a third baseman. So his first base experience isn't that good, and that showed.
Oh,
and
my God, did it show. Only thing he had to do was step on the bag and throw it to home plate. Or just drive Javi all the way back to home plate. He could have had the weirdest double play ever.
Well, it was two outs. All he had to do was step on the plate or tag Javi. That's all that had to be done. Nothing else. And FYI, for people that don't understand this, Wilson Contreras would not have scored no matter what the conditions was if Javi was deemed out.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. So, my God, it just, but it's, I mean, good for Javi. You know, the thing about Javi is, and maybe I'm going to be biased here. Everybody should know by now, I am a White Sox fan. And it seems like Javi is an exciting, exciting player. There's nobody in the world that could deny that. But it seems like, at least the last couple of years, and this year especially, he's been, or the spotlight has been sort of taken away from. He's a flashy Latino player. Mm-hmm. But some of the spotlight has been taken away from him from the White Sox young Latino players.
And there's no doubt about that. Yeah. I mean, the thing about Javi is Javi needs to create his excitement for him to succeed. And you do look at the south side of Chicago with the White Sox, and they have such a large community of Spanish-speaking players that they really are overshadowing what Javi's doing. And it's the other thing is, when you win, you're gonna be on top. And I think the Cubs are in a good position right now, but I don't know if they're gonna sustain it.
But you know what's being lost in all this, and I haven't had a chance to check out the standings today, but. You know, both Chicago teams are either in first place or right there.
Right. The Cubs are a half game out because the Cardinals won late last night in Arizona. But they've had a successful month of May, and they needed it. Here's a great stat about the Cubs' bullpen. They have not yielded a run in 11 games. Wow. 11 games they've not yielded a run. So that's really saying something about them, something that people thought would be a problem. The one thing that baseball is facing, both every team, White Sox and Cubs, is a lot of injuries right now, a lot of soft tissue injuries. And if you can overcome that, which the Cubs are doing right now, and the White Sox are doing magic tricks too, you're going to succeed.
Is it because just, you know, people forget that, you know, it's, you know, last year there was not a full season. Mm-hmm. Last year was just, what, 60 games?
We're almost at 50 right now.
Yeah, we're almost at 50 games, and so the season would almost be over with. So it, even though they are professional athletes, they stretch out a lot, it's an adjustment back for the players to, you know, going this long haul. And I'm wondering if what's going to happen later in the season.
Well, I look at it this way, Michael. Last year, think about it. You had spring training early in February and March, so you ramped up for it. Then it was shut down. Then it was ramped up again. And I think that what that does to the body is what we're finding out now, is that, you know, there was probably in between, you know, from winter to spring, I think that there probably should have been more connecting with the players to find out where they were training and how they were training. And I think that's the problem right now.
Yeah. I'm one to say that I think Chicago is much more exciting when both baseball teams are doing great. The rivalries are there. You can hardly wait for the Crosstown Classic. I think it's great. You know, let the Cubs do as well as they can, especially because, you know, they weren't, you know, it's been now several years since they won the World Series. You know, maybe they have a chip on their shoulder thinking, well, all the excitement, all the attention's on the White Sox, which is unusual, but maybe they feel like they've got something to prove.
You have three players that could walk after this season. You mentioned one is Javi Baez, one is Anthony Rizzo, and the other one, the big one, is Chris Bryant, who's having a phenomenal year right now.
One of my favorite players.
One of the best guys you could be around, period. The thing is, what's been surprising, for, like I mentioned, was their bullpen playing so well. They've also been able to find these pieces of players that were barely going to make the team, like a Matt Duffy performing. So it's kind of interesting that they got this mix, because they have to decide, the Cubs have to decide, especially with ownership, if they're going to sell off some some players because they don't want to sign them at the end of after the season. So everything they're doing, and you know, you wonder, because we can't get in the clubhouse because of what's going on. You wonder if there's something that's going on within the team saying, you know what, we just want to tell ownership, you know, go away. We're going to do it because of we want this so bad to tell you guys you have to make a decision.
Right, right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the White Sox. You know, you know, White Sox are in first place by a game and a half over the Indians. Seems like a lot of excitement, but every day there's a new controversy involving manager Tony La Russa, whether it's criticizing Yermín Mercedes or now something having to do with a concession stand, which had nothing to do with him.
No, and that was done. That was actually done before last season.
Right. So somebody just now, or you know, nobody noticed it up until then. And well, okay, people haven't heard the controversy. Basically, there was a concession area at Guaranteed Rate Field, which was named after a longtime woman who worked as a concessionaire. It was named after her. Well, they named it, I think, in 2005 or after, or 2006, right after the World Series. And they renamed it after Tony La Russa last year. But that's already 15, 16 years removed. How long was that name supposed to be there?
They actually have kept the plaque up there for her.
Yeah.
There was another part of the park that was called La Russa's Lounge, and they just moved the plaque.
Right. So, I mean, but it does seem to continue this, you know, a lot of people, you know, Tony La Russa was not a very popular hire for the White Sox. And it seems like, me included sometimes, are taking our frustrations out on that. What are you hearing about in terms of, let's forget about all the controversies, but how is he gelling with the young players? We know he had that riff with Yermín Mercedes. And it just seems unfortunate, but what are you hearing?
I'm hearing, and I've had contact with players personally, that they don't have an issue. They're fine. They're like, you know, and I think the best line we did hear from Tim Anderson on the record, he goes, is we're like the bad kids in the family. You know? Yeah. And they're embracing it. Yeah. The thing is, Tony had to learn about this team, and they had to learn about Tony. And what have they done? They're in first place.
Right.
So there's, and it's not despite what Tony's doing. Tony's made a couple of errors. And the interesting thing is Tony owned it after he made those errors, as opposed to some coaches and managers who won't even admit to anything. So you got to give him that props. The thing is, there is media, and especially on social media, keeps stirring it up every day. And the problem that I see with certain media is that they just want the clicks right on their social media so they could go to their boss and see where we keep promoting the story more and more. And the problem is it's no longer journalism. It's right. Gotcha. We got to get Tony La Russa. Does he make mistakes? Absolutely. Does he say, hey, I made a mistake? Yes, he does. The thing with Yermín Mercedes was something that he felt strongly about, the players felt strongly about, but it's over with. What happened? Mercedes had a home run last night on a 3-0 count.
And he also swung away on that.
right. And he had two more RBIs on the single. So the thing is this is a situation that you have a Hall of Fame manager who is older with a young team, and they're getting along. On the inside, it's the outside that's the problem.
All right. Well, moving away from a little bit of Major League Baseball, what's happening with the Chicago Sky, our WNBA team?
Well, there's a couple of things going on. First off, Candace Parker, who is the big free agent, has had an ankle injury, and they're hosting the LA Sparks, her former team, and she can't play. She's been out for 3 games, and so that's kind of a concern. The other issue that's going on is James Wade has filed a complaint with the WNBA because a ref referred to him as a boy, told the player to explain to your boy about a play. So there's some consternation going on between James Wade and the organization and the WNBA because of a ref using a term that he he deemed as being racist.
I see. So moving away from the sky a little bit, there's been a little bit of news with the Chicago Bears.
Yep, they begin OTAs next week. They had canceled this week, so it's going to be interesting to see if what players show up. And, of course, the spotlight has and will be on Justin Fields, their number one draft pick, with Andy Dalton, who's going to be the starting quarterback as far as Matt Nagy's concerned to begin with.
Cheryl, I don't know if you got a chance to read a column that came out this week in the Daily Herald about possible change in ownership with the Chicago Bears. It seems like that conversation comes up every so often. What do you make of it?
It could be a possibility because right now they're at a crossroads. You have a very large family that, you know, it's not easy with a family owned team in the NFL. It just is hard. And even though they're worth almost $3.5 billion with a B. That's a lot of money. But the big question is, will they build a new stadium? And the location that everyone is pointing at is in Arlington Heights, where Arlington Park Racetrack is for sale.
Oh, Cheryl, I hope that doesn't happen. I remember a long, long time ago, the people were upset that the Bears were going to move to Northwest Indiana. And I think the city council was going to pass something that you cannot take the name Chicago with you if you move. Now, Arlington Heights is still in Illinois, still in Cook County, but it wouldn't be the same.
It almost happened here twice, Arlington Park Racetrack. Twice it almost happened. There was a fire in the 70s, and that's when they were going to move and possibly build a stadium here. And Mayor Daley, the old Mayor Daley, said they could not use the name Chicago if they moved to Arlington Heights.
Oh, well, see, there you go. They want to attach Chicago. So, well, if they lose the Bears, maybe Soldier Field can get another NFL team. Maybe we'll get the Cardinals back.
I don't know that would be interesting.
Well, Cheryl Ray Stout is a veteran superstar reporter, sports reporter, legendary reporter in Chicago. If you're an aspiring sports reporter, this is the person you want to follow and track, because she's had an amazing and amazing career. I'm not just saying that because she comes on a lot. Well, I am kind of buttering up, so she keeps coming on. But Cheryl, thank you so much, and I hope you have a pleasant weekend.
Thank you, Michael.
And that's all the time we have for today's show. I'd like to thank all my guests. You can catch this episode as a podcast by going to lakeshorepublicradio.org. For me, Michael Puente, have a great weekend.